Joseph Pearl, Reel 2.
By changing, I even rocked into my own thoughts. And I have also changed. I felt I've got a responsibility to my parents. And I could see that the parents became children and the children became mothers and fathers. And as I go along, you'll see what I mean. We traveled for about 2 days and a night, and then we were herded out in Poland in a big, marched in into a big field in the middle of the forest. And there was a tent, a huge, huge circus tent with a big hole in the middle, and we were just marched in there without food, without sanitation, without water, just herded in. Well, I mean, I think it was in the afternoon when they marched it in there. And in the evening, we went to sleep. And in the morning, they formed a committee. But I didn't tell you what happened to the wagons. People fainted, people died, people did what you have to do. And there, you couldn't do anything about it. But I'll leave that apart because this is, you can think of it yourself. 2 days and a night, and not be able to go anywhere. So some were suffocated, and we were just sitting on the dead people to make room in order to sit. Then we went into this tent. And the following morning, they formed a committee of 12 of them to ask the commandant whether we can have a shovel or to dig for sanitation, to do something. And I never forget, my family was together with me here, and the gate was there, so I could see what's going on. And the commandant, there were Poles in German uniforms doing the dirty work for the Germans. The anti-Semitism, my dear, was so horrific. You could feel it. You could feel it in the air. And this fellow says to the 12 people, come here, come outside, come here, and don't be afraid, come here. They went outside, he lined them up, and he shot them. And he called out, anybody else want to come? So this was the first time I've seen a bullet, a little tiny bullet, kill a human being. And before, my father used to say, you know, a human being is as strong as iron, but weak as a fly. And all of a sudden I realized how weak that fly is, that a little bullet killed those 12 people. Then after about 2 days, we were still scraping, we had a little biscuit, a little this, a little that. But all the tent was surrounded by wire, but not electric wire, wire. And I said to my father, Dad, we've got to eat. I'm going to go out, and I'm going to forage for food. I get caught, I'll try and bribe the person who was catching me. So I had a gold tooth in my hand, I had a bit of money in my pocket. And I went out. And I went right through to the other side of the forest, that was a field. I brought home carrots, potatoes, sweet corn, beans. But I couldn't overload myself because I have to run, I have to be able to walk. And not to make it obvious that I'm packed out. And I came home and we started cooking. And the little people who were around us, we could all share the food together. And then all of a sudden, I found myself, 8 of us. We all decided to go out, one after another, a little time with a let before another one came up, so we can bring back more food in order to eat. Well, and I could see here I've taken over the role of my parents, and I felt a man. And also, you know, in the Jewish religion, when you are 13, they what they call it now,
the bar mitzvah.
That's right. Get the mitzvah, then you become a man. All the bad deeds goes on your head after that. God punishes you, not your parents. After 13, the parents get punished, but after 13, you get punished. And after about, I don't know, 2 weeks, and I used to go out every fourth night, we used to go out. He said to me, Joe, before you go out, I know you are only 10 and a half or something like that, because he said, I'm going to give you the blessing of a 13-year-old boy. He said, I may not be able to see you again. Who knows? But I'm going to give you the blessing just the same as the rabbi will give you the blessing when you're 13 years old. And I said to him, but again I'm jumping the gun. In that tent, there was, they used to send in these Polish youngsters, and I used to love beating up people. I used to tear the clothes off the people. And also, I once got called about the boys, and I gave him some money. Although he took the money, he reported, not me, he reported, he says, the Jews in there have got money, and they've got gold. So you can imagine these vultures coming in. They cordoned off an area, and one by one called in to search for gold, women, children, husbands, wives. So, I can't go into details how they deserve and the knees and women. But before we went, I had a cab. And you know the ridge here, I opened it up and I took out the rubber which was there, and I had two pieces of cardboard put in, and in between I put money, I put also little pieces of gold in. And it was a cat. Then they caught hold of me, because a lot of people had things sewn on in their apparel, and a lot of people had some, and their shoes. And so you can imagine the beatings before that get it out of you, and then for finding it, and you didn't tell them, you again got to beaten up. But I knew that I had it in my head. I had it in this cap. So when they pushed me, I took the cap and I, what the hell do you think you are? What do you want from me? So the cap was already over there. Checked it. And I said, you might kick me under what was going, but I wasn't afraid because I haven't had anything on me. That searched me, and I put the finger up my bottom and everything else. And I said, all right, off you go. And then I went over there, picked up the cap, and I told him.
Is that right, though, Joe, that they searched you internally?
Oh, yes.
Women as well as
oh,
men?
Oh, yes. Not only internally, in the passageway and in the other place, to make sure you didn't stick it up, and they looked for string, and they looked for this, and they looked for that. So it's the women went through hell. And even if I fancied somebody, they used to have intercourse there and then. I didn't care who it was. Well, that was one search. That found plenty of stuff. And then I went over to my farm. I saw a lot of peat in Gordon. And I also saw, for example, that if the sun got beaten up by these heathens, whoever went to help him, he was beaten up. Not a beaten up, killed. Both are killed. And I've seen it. It happened many, many, many times. And I went up to my father and I said, Dad, we've got to talk. He said, what do you want to say? I said, Dad, if I get caught and I get beaten up, even killed, I don't want you to come and help me. And it's going to work the other way around as well. If you get beaten up, don't expect me to come and help you. I said, because one of us is going to survive. One of us. Now I'm coming back for the blessing. Before I went out with the boys, he said, come over here and I'll give you the blessing, because God only knows when I'll see you again. He gave me the blessing, and out we went. And as we were coming back, we had to come back before dawn was breaking, because we wanted to get in so people wouldn't be caught. Well, as we were just coming out of the forest, we heard crying, shouting, dogs barking, shooting, and we were peering through behind the trees, and we saw that the whole camp was being evacuated. There were lorries, I shoved them into the lorries, and all the people who were ill, who couldn't go, old people, they shot them all and just left them laying there for the dogs to eat and the wolves, and off they went. But we couldn't come out to go with them, because had we come out, we would have been shot. So we pulled back into the forest, and we were there for a week. We were eating all these things ourselves until it was gone. We didn't make a fire. I mean, all these things we could eat, onions and carrots and sweet corn, beans, we could eat it without cooking. When the meat was gone, I said, this is no good. We've got to split up, we can't stay together. And we've got to look for our parents. But I was actually a very lucky boy, because I could speak Polish, I could speak Czech, I could speak Hungarian at a Hungarian school, I could speak Yiddish, and I could also speak Romanian. So you see, I was a self-contained person, because I could blend in. And as I was walking in boldly, you had to walk boldly. You could never show fear in your body, or fear in your face, or fear in your eyes. You got to be positive. You got to be bold. And I walked in like any. I didn't look any different than that person. And I got myself mixed up in a little group of Polish boys. The things that I heard, I could have torn them apart. I could have torn them apart alive. But I couldn't reveal my Jewish nature. And what was more horrific, that these youngsters were working for Jewish people. They were fed by the Jews. The Jews gave their parents work. And all that palaver. And I actually heard myself one Polish boy saying to another, let's not speak Polish because we understand Polish. Let's speak Yiddish. And they spoke perfect Yiddish. These Christian boys spoke perfect Yiddish. Can you imagine my feeling? My skin was curling in me. And then, I don't know how it came, we were going from one place to another because I wanted to hear where there is ghettos, where is this, where the people went to, what was happening. Well, one day I saw a little group of German soldiers, and they had sort of horses, and they had sort of barracks there, they used to sleep, and me being a horsey person, because I had a horse of my own, I loved animals, I loved horses. And I came near to this group of German soldiers, and I said to them, I said, this is a lovely horse, and I'm petting the horse, you know. I speak to the German, you know. And I said, can I groom it? And he said, yes, go on. He gave me the brush and the metal comb, and I was brushing the comb away. In the meantime, I heard him talking, you know, where they have been and what they have done and how many people they've killed. There's a ghetto over there, and there's a ghetto over there. They more or less gave me a little map. When I heard all that, after about a few days, I excused myself, and I went there in order to find this ghetto. And I also knew that the ghettos were run. The Germans were very clever. They picked the right Jews to look after the Jews. You know what I mean? That they will do anything in order that as long as they are alive, you know, to do their dirty work. There are people, for to save your own life, you'll do anything. And I also knew that especially the police, the Jewish police in the ghettos, used to wear a certain hat with a blue band around it. And I was with these boys. And I actually was leading the boys back to the ghetto. I said, well, probably you'll find food there and find food there. And that sort of came with me. And when this policeman came out, he used to take stones and throw stones at them. I wanted to get near to him. I wanted to find out whether new groups of people come on to this ghetto. So I took a stone and threw at him. And he started chasing me. I ran, but I ran in such a way that he should catch me. I wanted he should catch me. He caught me, started beating. I said, hey, I said, I'm a Jew myself. And he's still beating me. He said, go on, talk what you want to say. And he's still beating me. I said, has a new group of people coming together? Because I'm looking for my parents. I told him what happened. He said, I can't belong with you. He said, the only thing I can tell you, I'll take you into the ghetto. When I come to the gate, the guard, the machine guns and German soldiers, when I come to the gate, he said, I'll chuck you in. And when you fall down, you get up, he said, start running. Stop. Don't look back. Just start running. Which he did. Came, he chucked me in, I put my thumb, and I ran, and I ran, and I ran. He said, I got another dirty shoe to the German soldiers' face. What I saw people 99% dead but still moving on the ground. Babies, children of 5 years old, children of 7 just lay there and die. I saw bodies moving, skin and bone, but moving. Walking, I thought to myself, why is he walking? Where is he going? And they were their eyes fixed in the front. They didn't see anything. And yes, I looked around me. I saw all these corpses laying, nobody cared, nobody, and all the people who were sick and everything, all over the place. And then I saw a door with a mother feeding a baby, probably with a baby was about 3 weeks old or something. Feeding the baby, and all of a sudden, the head dropped, the baby rolled away, cried, the mother was dead, and nobody was able to help the child. His father died, my mother cried, the baby cried and cried until she died. Because I couldn't go forward, because I looked across the other side there in our window, I saw a face. An old face peered through the window and beckoning me like this. So I decided to go to him. And as I went to him, he took me inside and he said, "What are you doing here?" So I tell him the story, what happened to him. He said, "You don't belong here. Nobody walks outside." I said, "I'll arrange for you. Somebody going to take you out through the sewers, out of this kennel. Get out of here. Get out because you don't belong here. You're too healthy." And a man came along in the night. He took me down the sewers. And left, right, light, left, walking through water and everything. And he said, "Over there, get out and get off."
Have you any idea the name of that ghetto?
I've got no idea, because that was the thing that I saw, the thing that faced me, and also I was overwhelmed with what confronted me. I couldn't think. The only thing I was thinking of to save my life. I thought I fell into a pit of snakes. And do you know something? Every time I think about it, my name is Joseph. And the Bible went through my mind. The Bible went through my mind. Like Joseph was trapped in the pit. But there isn't time to think. But this was sort of hovering away on my brain. Anyway, again, I was left to my own. But I still wanted to find my parents. Well, I searched and searched. It took me over a year. Then I found, when he said there's a ghetto here and a ghetto there, it took me nearly 9 months or a year to get to that other ghetto, awoken and surviving and get to that place. And all of a sudden I got caught by NSS. I don't know how or why, and I was marched into that ghetto with a gun in my back, and as he marched me in the ghetto, after about 10 minutes walking into the ghetto, I saw a column, 5 abreast, of naked people, women, men, children, old people, young people. After the column went for about 5 minutes past me, he ordered me to stop. He asked me to undress. And he pushed me into the column. And we marched into a forest where a huge long ditch was already dug, and it was filled with some, I don't know what it was filled with, but I could see vapors rising, so it must have been some kind of carbine or some, I don't know what it was. And you can hear now again, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, machine gun going. Well, you see, when you don't see it, it doesn't bother you. You forget shooting, and it's far away. It doesn't. It, that doesn't somehow connect you with anything. But as you come nearer and nearer and nearer, you become to see faces a little bit. So you know who's being killed, you can see who's being killed. Well, all of a sudden, I must have been about 5 rows away or 6 rows away from the front. I saw my mother and my 4 sisters lined up, and before I had a chance to say, "Mother," they were already dead. And somehow, time stands still. You know, you become like a lump of salt. But what woke me up again is I saw my 5 nieces and nephews being marched, and I had the audacity to ask the children to hold hands. And when the bullet hit those babies, the bullets lifted them about 3 feet off the ground before they fell into the ditch. And I saw my soul being shot, and in that ditch, my little boy in that ditch. I would have been more or less the next one to be lined up, but all of a sudden the sirens went. Planes were coming over Poland to bomb Poland. And we were ordered to lay face downwards, because that was order. The planes used to come, the siren went, you had to lay down face downwards. Well, when that order was given, lay down, everybody started running, kicking to people. And I certainly wasn't going to hang about. I also started to run, and I ran, and I ran. The machine guns were going, shooting the people, but I just ran and ran and ran very deep into the forest. And all of a sudden, I had voices on the other side of the forest. Myself, what am I going to do now? I'm naked. I can't go back. Because I will be killed. I can't go to front. They'll keep me away. What am I going to do? There was a sack not far away, more or less a rotten sack. I picked it up. I made 3 holes, put it on me. And as I put it on me, the cold touched my skin. And something came over me. Something came over me. I wasn't afraid. I thought to myself, "Joe, if you were not killed today, you'll never be killed. I've been so close. And I wasn't killed, I'll never be killed." And again, I straightened myself out. And I went straight in, with a farmer, I went straight into people working in the field, and I said, "Who's in charge here?" I said, "That man." I went over to that man. He knew who I was. And he gave me food, gave me a pair of shoes, and a pair of trousers, and a jacket. Don't have shirts, I don't know, socks or anything like that, or pants. Anyway, and I started working. After a while, nobody asked me questions. I just worked, came in the morning, worked, went home, I had my meal, and went to sleep. After a little while, in the morning, he came about 4 o'clock in the morning to me, and he said, "Look here, I want you to get out now," he said, "and I mean now.